Pat Stack.
Different level. I don't know the rules anymore or something's changed, but I can't believe it.
It's a 4-0 goal. Big cheer. Are you kidding me? What is that?
It's NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve Hockey Crew on your home of the Winnipeg Jets and all things NHL. TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
That'll do it for the hockey game here tonight. Winnipeg has won two in a row against Minnesota. Jets have points in five straight. Final score in a hard-fought win is Winnipeg 2, Minnesota 1.
That call last night from Paulie Edmonds as the Winnipeg Jets go into Minnesota, play their second divisional game of the year, all against the Wild, as it so turns. And the Jets are victorious last night by a 2-1 margin, a hard-fought game. Anytime you can go into Minnesota and win a game on the road, it's a good victory for the hometown team. Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this evening at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we welcome you to NHL This Week. 2+ hours of hockey talk for you on this Wednesday evening. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by my good friend, Ezra Ginsberg. The man on the far left is Sean Asor. Producer Rory doing the great job manning the board. Gentlemen, we of course start with last night's Jets Wild game. A 2-1 victory for the Winnipeg Jets, a game that the Jets came out strong in the first period, certainly, and I think their performance maybe dropped off throughout the game, or alternatively, the Wild performance improved throughout the game, but at the end of the 60 minutes, the only thing that matters, Ezzy, is that the Winnipeg Jets have the 2-1 victory last night in Minnesota.
Yeah, guys, it was timely goal scoring, and it was excellent goaltending from Connor Hellebuck, and you know he just continues to pad those statistics. His save percentage is at .940 right now, which puts him top five in the NHL right now, and you know, you mentioned, you know, that the Minnesota Wild really came on there, especially in the third period. I think the Jets only had two shots, if I'm not mistaken, there in the third period. So it kind of reminds you a little bit, guys, of that game against the Vancouver Canucks when the Winnipeg Jets hung on for that, I believe it was a 2-1 victory as well. So, you know, the way the Jets are playing right now, and, you know, you kind of worry about a player like Patrick Laine, who has no points and no goals in his last four games. Mm-hmm. But Blake Wheeler and Mark Scheifele, I thought, and Kyle Connor, I think, continued their strong play from the 7-1 win against the Pittsburgh Penguins. And obviously, you know, you thought that maybe the momentum was going to change a little bit when the Winnipeg Jets goal was disallowed. But when you're talking about, you know, Kyle Connor just goes to the net, Mark Scheifele obviously, you know, provides that tip and screen in front of Alex Stalock. But the story for me really was Nikolaj Ehlers taking advantage of a turnover, the Jets capitalizing on their opportunities, because there weren't a lot of opportunities for the Jets, and sure, they shut it down a little bit, you know, towards the end of the second period and into the third period, but Connor Hellebuck provides excellent goaltending for the Jets. You know, they only need two goals, and at the end of the day, a road win like that, I mean, it doesn't really matter how you get it. You go back to Winnipeg, you've got two home games coming up, two of the next three against Dallas, but really, that's what matters at this point. It's those 2 points.
Yeah, absolutely. Any way you cut it, the Winnipeg Jets, after starting the year with those first two losses, are 6-1-2 in their last nine games. And sure, you can, you know, I'll listen to some discussion about, you know, is the style of play conducive to long-term success, i.e. they're getting absolutely dominated in puck possession night in and night out. But ultimately, the results are what matter most. And right now, this team is 6-3-2 on the year, 6-1-2 in their last nine, and Connor Hellebuck is, at least through this stretch, proving to be an absolute top-flight NHL goaltender.
Yeah, and you look at some of those saves that Connor Hellebuck had to make in the last, I'd say, 6 minutes of the game when the puck was literally in the jet zone the entire time. A couple tip plays that the Wild were looking to execute. They love that high tip play, which you're starting to see a lot more around the NHL, the high tip causing, even if it doesn't go in, just mayhem around the net. Mm-hmm. But Connor Hellebuck made a shoulder save on Michael Granlund that saved the game. And I was watching it, and I'm thinking to myself, last year, That puck probably goes in the net, but he's out. He's aggressive. He's challenging. He's comfortable in his biomechanics. Hits him. You sneer.
Okay. Enough about biomechanics because nobody knows what that actually means. But yeah, I hear
what
you're saying. I know what you're saying.
Yeah, it means he's comfortable in the way he's moving his body.
Right. How about we just say that? He's comfortable in his body.
Well, no. He's comfortable in his positioning and the way he's moving his body. And he's out there challenging. He's confident. And it's a big save. And it's just really reassuring for Jets fans. And we were talking about this yesterday in the post-game show just around the station. Do you think if Connor Hellebuyck doesn't go through the struggles he went through last year, he comes back and is rebounded the way he is as of now to start the season?
Yeah, it's a good question, Sean, because, I mean, when you look at Connor Hellebuck's performance last season, at times it was really good and at times it wasn't very good. And when Michael Hutchinson came in relief of Connor Hellebuyck, he wasn't able to provide the type of goaltending that you needed. And you could make a strong argument that Connor Hellebuyck's struggles last year really have helped him this year. Mm. And obviously the work that he did in the offseason in BC and all of that. But, I mean, the fact of the matter is, right now, guys, Connor Hellebuyck isn't coming out of the net. And he's going to play, we know, next game against the Dallas Stars. And I wouldn't be surprised if you see him again Saturday against the Montreal Canadiens. Sure, that might have a little bit to do with the way that he plays on Thursday night. But he has been excellent so far this season. There's no doubt about that.
No, Connor Hellebuyck has certainly been the linchpin to the Jets' success. I mean, if you had sat down, if you had told anybody who's watched the Winnipeg Jets for the last 5 years that they're going to have four games in a row where they give up only one goal in regulation time. I mean, going back to last Thursday in Pittsburgh and then Friday in Columbus and then the shellacking that they laid on the Penguins on Sunday and then last night in Minnesota. I mean, the Jets are only giving up one goal a game. It is, I mean, people would think you're crazy. It's unheard of.
It doesn't seem real.
It doesn't seem real. And I know that they're getting outplayed possession-wise, but they're able to... They're minimizing the mistakes. You don't see, like, last night's goal, the goal that that Luke Kunin scored for the Wild. You don't see defensive breakdowns like that. You haven't seen them in the last few games. That one was Andrew Kopp chasing back. You had three Jets players below the goal line. That was an error that you used to see regularly from this team. That at least right now, and I'm still skeptical. if it's going to last, at least right now they're doing a great job at keeping the game simple and not making fundamental errors of that nature.
Right, and everything's not perfect right now, as you mentioned. In the third period, the Minnesota Wild completely dominated possession time, and at times the Jets were giving the Minnesota Wild too much at their own blue line. But as you said, you go into Pittsburgh and Columbus, and you only give up four goals, and then against the Pittsburgh Penguins, one of the best offensive teams in the league, you only give up one goal. And you know that that's probably not going to happen every night. But right now, the Jets have been managing the puck better, and there's certainly a better commitment to team defense, less turnovers, and they have to keep that going because we know the Dallas Stars have a lot of offensive firepower as well.
As you mentioned earlier, Patrick Laine, he hasn't had an even strength goal going back way back now. I mean, the two goals he scored against Minnesota in the first game were on the power play. How concerned should people be? How concerned would you be about Patrick Laine and his struggles thus far this year, if even struggle is the word you want to use?
Well, I mean, you have to be concerned a little bit, and I think you would probably be more concerned by the fact that Patrick Laine hasn't been out there on the power play, right? And you expect Patrick Laine to be out there on the first power play unit, and you're not getting a lot of shots from Patrick Laine. So there's no doubt that he has struggled. I think he had a good game against the Pittsburgh Penguins on the road, not so much in the game at home on Sunday, which the Jets won 7-1. But whenever you have a player of Patrick Laine's quality, you never expect him to go two or three games without a goal. And there will be slumps, especially early on in his career. But I think it has to be a concern if you're the Winnipeg Jets, because right now you're getting most of your offense from one line. And sure, you got some secondary offense in the game against the Pittsburgh Penguins, goals from Brendan Lemieux, goals from Andrew Kopp, but you definitely want to have that second line going.
Patrick Laine, Sean, two shots total in his last three games. Two shots on goal in his last three games. That's just not enough for a guy who has 40, 50 goal talent like Laine, and the fact the Jets are succeeding despite his lack of production right now, is, I suppose, a positive, but at the same time, it's also got to be a concern.
It's a concern for sure. I mean, it's not a grand concern. It's not like he's invisible out there. He's still bashing his big body around. He's making some good outlet passes. He's clearing the pucks out of the walls. You know, just the little things that if you can't score, you've got to be doing right in order to be able to play on a second line in the NHL. I think one thing that is pretty evident is when you watch him and Ehlers together, Laine always, he's looking for Ehlers on that backdoor play a lot of the time in the offensive zone, and he's deferring away from just the natural instinct to just throw the puck on net, because like we always talk about, he is a very underrated playmaker, especially in the offensive zone.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he just kind of wants to prove to everyone that he's not just this one-and-done shooter.
Not a one-trick pony.
And he also recognizes, I think, the talent of Ehlers. Like, you remember the pass to Ehlers against Pittsburgh? Matt Murray made that outrageous save on the back door. Or was it Bobrovsky? Am I getting that confused? One of the two.
But Laine certainly has the... You're right. Your point is that Laine certainly has the playmaking skills in addition to just the goal-scoring skills.
Yeah, and he's looking for a good friend of his. You know, their chemistry is evident on and off the ice. And it's just, you know, maybe just shooting... That natural instinct to shoot right away just isn't there for him anymore. He's looking maybe to set up, get his other line mates involved. And, you know, that's natural for a guy who's just developing in his second year in the NHL.
Ezzy, what were your thoughts on the officiating in last night's game? Yeah. Were they the stars of the show last night?
Well, I thought the first goal should have counted.
Yeah.
And it was a little bit peculiar why the refs waved that goal off. And then the penalty to Kyle Connor in the third period, I believe, shouldn't have been a penalty, in my opinion. So, I mean, in those particular cases, I didn't think the refereeing was great, and obviously they had their reason, but I think most people watching the game at home thought that that first goal was going to count.
Yeah, I mean, and again, the first goal didn't count because it's not a reviewable play.
Because it's called a hand pass.
It's called a hand pass, so really as soon as, you know, Myers, you know, made the hand pass to himself, as soon as it touched his stick, the play was blown dead. It's almost as if the puck doesn't go into the net. Now, I get it from the official's perspective, and it's just sort of, I think, one of those unfortunate plays, because even if it was reviewable, it's already been blown dead, so they can't go back and act as if the puck went in the net, even though the play is blown dead.
And then Joel Armia's stick involved in the whole equation also just confuses things even further, because then if it is off his shoulder into Armia, and then it is a hand pass, and it was a jumble. They showed multiple angles, and it's unfortunate. And Paul Maurice said it best. He goes, you know, it was one goal. We're lucky that it didn't end up costing us at the end of the day.
But to your point, I think it was you, Sean, who said it earlier in the segment, that didn't derail the team. They were able to continue applying the pressure onto the Wild, which ended up in Kyle Connor's goal in the first period, which was the 1-0 goal, which held up all the way through the second period until Nikolai Ehlers made it 2-0 after the pick six.
I was going to use that term.
Yeah, with Matt Dumba. Yeah. Matt Dumba used the term in the postgame comments, referring to it as a pick six. And Dumba sat for the rest of the game, benched after that turnover. Bruce Boudreau not happy with his play thus far this year.
No, Matt Dumba was very critical of himself. Bruce Boudreau said it after the game. They put a lot of pressure on him, but they expect him to embrace that pressure and to perform. And he got a real good bench lashing after that that soft play that he called routine, that he said is a routine play for me. I make that play all the time. Well, unfortunately, you have to keep your eyes open when you got 27 zipping around on the ice looking to pick that puck off.
And give Nikolai Ehlers a lot of credit.
Totally.
He drew a penalty in the first period, and you know his speed was an issue for the Wild the entire game. And even though Patrick Laine maybe didn't have his best game, I thought Ehlers was strong all night. And as we talked about, I mean, that a game like that, that's all you need is really, you know, one turnover, and it changes the outlook of the game. Mm-hmm. And for the Jets, obviously at the time, it wasn't the go-ahead goal, but it turned out to be the game-winning goal. And, you know, Ehlers continues to be one of the Jets' top players.
Yeah, I mean, almost the most impressive part of Ehlers' play, besides the goal and a generally well-rounded game, is him racing to beat the icing late in the third period there. You got to see his speed on full display. I can't recall who the defenseman was for the Wild, but Ehlers blew past him as if he was standing still. Fantastic demonstration of the skill that Nikolai Ehlers possesses. The Jets and the Stars will do battle tomorrow night. When we come back, we talk about that game. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Oh! Ehlers. Ehlers across the line with Scheifele. In the line, and scores!
Almost a year ago, Patrick Laine with the hat trick as the Winnipeg Jets pounded the Dallas Stars 8-2 at then MTS Center, now Bell MTS Place. That was November 8th, 2016. The Jets looking for a repeat tomorrow night. That'll be November 2nd, 2017, as the Jets and the Stars will do battle for the first time this season. The rematch goes Monday night down in Big D. Stars off to a 7-5-0 record through their first 12 games of the season, and sort of a lot of similarities to the Winnipeg Jets in that these are two teams known for their goal scoring and known for their inability to keep the puck out of the net. But you look at the Jets' goals for, goals against, 33 goals for, 32 goals against for the Winnipeg Jets, Ezzy. For the Dallas Stars, 34 goals for, 33 goals against. So two teams, Dallas played one game more than the Jets, but both teams really sort of trying to change their spots, like a leopard trying to change their spots, although a leopard can't do that, I suppose, in becoming more defensively minded and maybe giving up a little bit on the offensive side of the game.
Yeah, the last couple of games have been pretty good for the Dallas Stars, a couple of 2-1 victories over the Canucks. And the Flames before that, they gave up 5 to Edmonton and Colorado. But that's obviously the biggest difference between the Dallas Stars this year and last year. And, you know, they have been struggling at times. Obviously, Ben Bishop comes in, and he's played almost every single game. I believe Kari Lehtinen's only started 2 games. And when you talk about this Stars team, one thing that's really stood out to me in their first 12 games, as you mentioned, Drew, is the special teams. Top 5 in the league in power play and penalty kill. And that was an issue for the Stars last year. They were second worst in the NHL in goals allowed. Only Colorado gave up more goals last year. And, you know, the Dallas Stars so far seem to be on the right track on the defensive side of the puck. But defensively, they're still trying to figure things out. Julius Honka was sent back to the American Hockey League. Steven Johns is going to play Thursday night in Winnipeg. But certainly, this is the biggest difference that had to really happen for the Dallas Stars. I mean, they had to be better defensively. It started in goal, and they've been better on defense as well. Obviously, Alex Radulov has added to that group of forwards there. Tyler Seguin, Jamie Benn at the top of the scoring leaders. That's who you expect to be there. But, you know, this is a team that the Jets are going to be fighting with for a playoff spot. So with 2 out of the next 3 games coming up against Dallas, these are big games for them.
Yeah, absolutely they are. The Dallas Stars, as you mentioned, Ezzy, I mean, we know who they're led by offensively, that it is the Jamie Benn and the Tyler Seguin show. It always has been, and they're, to no surprise, at the top of the list there. Dangerous team in special teams there, Sean. If you look at the special teams thus far in the, you know, early in the season through a month of the year, but still best power play in the league, 30.8% it's clicking at, incredible rate. Second best penalty kill, 90.5%. Mm-hmm. So if you're the Winnipeg Jets, you really need to be conscientious about not taking any penalties. They had been good at that. Fortunately for them, the penalty kill has been very good as of late, but you really are going to take a big chance if you get into that kind of game with the Dallas Stars and their dynamic power play.
Yeah, you're rolling the dice if you allow the likes of Klingberg and Seguin, Ben, Radulov to get on the ice together with the man advantage. And yes, the Jets' penalty kill has been improving as the season's been going along, the Matt Hendricks effect.
Mm-hmm. Tongue in cheek.
Yeah, but yeah, you know, it's every game we talk about the Jets, we talk about discipline and how important it is and how you don't take silly penalties. I mean, Jacob Trouba got away with one last night when he ran Nito Niederreiter from behind into the boards in a 2-1 game.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the kind of plays, regardless that Niederreiter retaliates, you have to be smarter than that, and you can't allow the league's best power play to come on and take advantage of silly plays like that. But, hey, listen, we talked about Patrick Laine's struggles earlier. Well, 2 hat tricks and a 2-goal game against Dallas last year. Seems like a good excuse to get off the schneid.
It certainly has had a lot of success against the Dallas Stars in his young career. Ezzy, I mean, you look at this Dallas Stars team, very top-heavy offensively. We know that, you know, Ben, Seguin, Radulov, they're the only 3 players they have in double digits in terms of points. Ben leading the team 7 goals, 7 assists. Sagan 7 goals, 5 assists, and then Radulov 4 and 6. After that, the offense has really sort of dried up for the Dallas Stars. Another similarity. Doesn't that sound familiar to a Winnipeg Jets team that is very top-heavy and had been struggling to get much offense from their bottom six? Gotten a little bit better in the last few games, but certainly was the case for the Jets for a while to start this year.
Yeah, and the Dallas Stars obviously went out and acquired Radulov to kind of help that secondary scoring. And, you know, Jason Spezza has had a tough start to the season, hasn't scored a goal yet, which is really, you know, surprising. A month into the season, Jason Spezza has no goals. But, you know, they do have other players that can put the puck in the net. Radek Fax is a guy that I really like. You remember he had a breakout performance 2 years ago in the playoffs. But certainly this isn't a team that you have to worry about too many different players. I mean, it is really one line right now. It is that top line. Kind of reminds you for years with the Ryan Getzlaff, Corey Perry line. Sagan and Ben usually play together. They've split them up before, but certainly Ken Hitchcock has them playing together now. But you expect Mark Scheifele's line to most likely go against the Tyler Seguin line. It's possible that you might see Brian Little's line. But right now, you know, they definitely need to start getting some more scoring from the third and fourth lines. And like you said, that's similar to what the Jets are experiencing.
Yeah, Sean, the influence of Ken Hitchcock, we know he's back in Dallas for his second go-around as Stars head coach. You know, last year in St. Louis, was dismissed mid-season. The sort of time for a change in St. Louis last year, you know, Ken Hitchcock just makes so much sense back behind the bench in Dallas that you can see that they're his influence is evident simply because of the way they're playing, with a much more structured approach to the game and much less of the fire wagon hockey. I mean, if these two teams, when they played last year, I mean, you could easily expect there to be over 10 goals scored in the game just by, you know, the brands of hockey they played, both teams trying to get that out of their DNA in time for this season and, I guess, the first example tomorrow night at Bell MTS Place.
Yeah, you look at the Dallas schedule, you know, goals against 2-2-2-1-1, you know, numbers that are impressive for a team that was trying to reduce goals against heading into the season. They shored up on their goaltending with Ben Bishop and, you know, adding a defensive structure of Ken Hitchcock coaching. It's going to be a tough task for the Jets, and they're going to need to crack it. Like, just as if the Dallas Stars needs secondary scoring going in, I think the Jets, it's a good opportunity for the secondary scoring for the Winnipeg Jets to kind of take advantage of a lesser bottom six, perhaps. And not so much, maybe much less, but a lesser quality.
Well, you get last change, so you can try and get the matchups you
want.
Yeah,
you get the matchups you want. You know, the bottom six has been scoring a lot for, or, you know, has been scoring recently for the Jets, so maybe
they've been impactful.
Exactly.
Which is, you've noticed the bottom six, which for the first 5-6 games of the year, you could say that they were relatively invisible. Now the bottom six is out there. They're playing, at least when they have their shifts, they're not always an abomination. They are, a lot of them being spent in the opposition zone. And another opportunity tomorrow night for that bottom six to have an impact against the Dallas Stars. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. As one of the additions to the back end of the Dallas Stars this offseason was Mark Mathot. He comes over, well, from the Vegas Golden Knights technically, but via the Ottawa Senators. He was an expansion draft pick by the Golden Knights before being traded to the Dallas Stars. Mathot with another young Swedish defenseman in John Klingberg. Boy, that sounds, with offensive upside, who's offensively talented, sounds familiar to the role he played in Ottawa with a guy named Erik Karlsson. Your thoughts on sort of Mathot and Klingberg from what you've seen from them so far this year?
I actually haven't watched the Dallas Stars much this year, but by all accounts, Mark Mathot has provided a steadying influence, and I know that he doesn't have any points yet on the season, but I know that he brings a lot of what he brought when he played with Erik Karlsson, when he was paired up with him, the Ottawa Senators. We know that he's a big body. He blocks shots, very physical defenseman. And when you look at this Dallas Stars group, I mean, Jamie Oleksiak is a guy that's always intrigued me, drafted the same year as Mark Scheifele, and I know that they've kind of had him on the second pair at times. Right now it's Dan Hamhuis on that second pair with Greg Patterin, former member of the Montreal Canadiens. And Jamie Oleksiak has struggled at times as well, and they had Julius Honka in the lineup, as we talked about during the first segment. He has struggled at times. So right now, they're trying to find the right mix in Dallas. But, you know, I wish I could give you more on Mark Methot, Drew, but when you're talking about this group of defensemen here, I mean, the big issue with the Dallas Stars was moving the puck out of their own zone and really having problems in their own zone, managing the puck, transitioning out of their zone. So Mark Methot has obviously stabilized that decor a little bit, because John Klingberg, as we know, he's a guy that likes to rush the puck. So Methot is kind of a good complement, similar to in Ottawa when Carlson was kind of that puck-rushing defenseman. Mark Mathot's more of a stay-at-home defenseman. And we know Ken Hitchcock, you know, tends to lean towards that defensive style of hockey. So it was a very astute pickup by Jim Nill. And when you're talking about, you know, some of these other defensemen, young defensemen, Jamie Oleksiak, Esa Lindell, I mean, the jury is still out on them. I think they've taken strides in certain areas, and I think they've left more to be desired in other areas.
Martin Hanzel, another offseason addition for the Dallas Stars. He's out of the lineup, so you won't see him tomorrow. They've called up Jason Dickinson from the Texas Stars AHL team. He might get into the lineup tomorrow. I'll tell you what, boys, why don't we ask Mike Hajka of the Dallas Morning News about the Stars. That's coming up next. Mike joins us to talk about the Jets' opponent tomorrow night. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Bottom of the hour, you're listening to NHL This Week. You're live on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Sean Assor, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program a very good friend of the show with the Dallas Morning News. He covers the Dallas Stars. Mike Hajka returns to the program. Mike, good morning and thank. Good morning, pardon me. Good evening and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, it's good to be on.
Mike, always pleased to have you on to talk about the Dallas Stars. As we did last segment, mentioned the Stars off to a 7-5-0 start. And sort of similar to the Winnipeg Jets in, you know, way fewer goals for than you would typically expect to see from this team, at least last year. But conversely and positively, way fewer goals against. Is that the Ken Hitchcock influence and the Ben Bishop influence so far, that the Dallas Stars are just playing a much more sound defensive structure so far this season?
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, it's funny, you Hitch talks about, oh, you create offense out of defense and the counterattack is huge. And I get all that, and I do think there's a certain basis to it. But the bottom line is that guys who would have gone heavy to the net or guys who would have tried to win a puck battle at the blue line are now thinking, which is a good thing. They're stopping. They're thinking, okay, if I take this risk, what is the cost? And so now they're not taking the risk that they took last year, and that, thus, one, it lowers your goals against average, and they do have a better goalie, and two, it lowers your goals for because you're just not getting those chances like you were.
Mike, why has Jason Spezza struggled so much this year?
Usage, I think. He's at about 13 and a half minutes a game, so that's bad, and he's toggled between center and right wing. I think they're trying to find the right fit for him. Hanzel was out last game. He played center. He was good, but again, he's been going between center and right wing for the last year, and it's hard on him, I think. He's really good on the second power play unit. So he's picking up his points there. But at even strength, it's just been tough. And then, you know, they just called up Jason Dickinson. I think he wasn't at practice today, so we don't know for sure. But I think their plan is to play him at center and then move Spezza back to the right wing, possibly on the same line. So we'll see if that helps or hurts or how it goes. But, you know, when they brought in Martin Hanzel, they got too many centers. And they understood it. And they, you know, the belief is the old Detroit way of centers can play anywhere, and they just have to adjust. But by now having Sagan, Hanzel, Spezza, Radek Foxa, Devin Shore, Jason Dickinson, they have too many centers, and so now they have to have some players adjust, and right now Jason Spezza is the guy who's having to adjust.
Mike, we were setting up the Jets and the Stars game for tomorrow, and we were kind of talking about the back end of the Stars and looking at the pairing of Mark Methot and John Klingberg, and we were trying to figure out, you know, how that pairing has been working successfully, and is it just Mark Methot being so used to playing with kind of an Erik Karlsson-type player to come in and slot in to play with a very similar style player in John Klingberg?
Yeah, in theory, I think. They haven't been together all year. Hitch went with Lindell and Klingberg for a while, and they've just put Methot and Klingberg back together the last couple of games. But on paper, I do think that, in fact, I think the D you're going to see tomorrow might be their best D. And so what it would be Methot and Klingberg, Ham Hughes and Greg Patterin has been really solid, and then Esa Lindell and Steven Johns is coming back from a concussion. So in a perfect world, that might be their best D. And again, it's the thought process is lefty, 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 righty, righty, righty. You know, a pretty good defensive player with a guy who might have a little bit more skill. And I think that's, you know, it goes through the whole lineup. And I think Methot and Klingberg, that's what we wrote on paper in the summertime, that here's a guy who's played with Erik Karlsson, who understands the mind of a creative defenseman and who can help give him some puck support when he needs it. And it's been good. And I truly believe John Klingberg is one of the better defensemen in the NHL, and his numbers sort of bear it out. So I think he's on the upswing and is getting better, and Mark Methot will help him get to where he needs to go.
Mike Hyka is our guest on NHL This Week. Mike covers the Dallas Stars for the Dallas Morning News. Mike, the one defenseman you didn't mention there when you're going through the pairs that we might see tomorrow night for the Stars is Jamie Oleksiak. You know, is that emblematic of the fact that you didn't mention him? Is that emblematic of the struggles he's had this year? It's a guy who's a former, you know, first overall pick, like, albeit 6 years ago now. Have we seen the sort of the peak of Jamie Oleksiak, or does he still have more development to do?
I think a lot of it will depend on injuries. If a couple of guys go down, Jamie will go into the lineup, and I think we'll go in on a regular basis. And if he goes in on a regular basis, I think that's a good thing for him. If he doesn't have to think about coming in and coming out, which he's done for the last 3 years pretty much, having that thought out of his head would help him get to where he wants to get to. But they are rolling through just a number of defensive changes, and at no point in time has Jamie really stepped up and said, look, I'm going to be one of your better players. You know, John Klingberg has done that. Esa Lindell has done that. Steven Johns is sort of doing it this year. He was doing it before he got the concussion. The guess is he'll continue along that path. Patrick Nemeth didn't. He got moved, or he got claimed on waivers by Colorado. They have Miro Heiskanen, who should be coming to North America next year, who third overall pick. I think he jumps in pretty quick. And they have Julius Honka, who's in the AHL and knocking on the door. So, yeah, it's a pretty tough time for Jamie Oleksiak. He really needs to, when he gets a chance, to make a statement that he needs to be in the top six. And if not, then they'll have to move past him, I think, next year with the guys they've got coming in.
Mike, you've covered this team for many years, including this core group of players. How have you seen Alexander Radulov change the dynamic of this team? Not just the points, but what element has he brought that maybe they were lacking in previous years?
It's a hard thing to judge exactly what Alexander Radulov does. We were talking to Hitch the other night. He had a great game. Radulov had a great game, and Hitch called him a wild card, and I think that pretty much sums it up. Thomas Vanek was playing for Vancouver, and Radulov was playing for Dallas, and every time they were on the ice, something happened, something positive, something negative. They didn't have quiet shifts. They turned the puck over, it went the other way. They got the puck back, they went the other way. And so he's just, I don't know how to define him yet. He does have energy, I will say that. He is nonstop energy. He works extremely hard, except for he works without structure. So in a team that, you know, really wants structure, that's an interesting add. So it'll be interesting just to see how he goes about things. My criticisms will be he does not mind trying to beat three guys at one time, which I think, you know, most of us who watch this game in the NHL know that's usually not a good thing. The other thing is He does not mind being in a different place than he's supposed to be, with a thought process that maybe he sees the game differently. And when you're, you know, preaching puck support and the forward should be where he should be so that the defenseman knows he's going to be there and the forward knows he's going to be there, that can create some holes in the lineup. Now, the other side of it is, just like we said earlier, you know, with Lindy's system, it creates some great offensive chances. If you're unpredictable, then the other team doesn't know where you're going to be. So then that creates a ton of offensive chances. And Radulov just, you know, he grabs the puck and he goes. And, you know, he doesn't mind putting shots on net. He doesn't mind, you know, making just incredible setups to his teammates, except for some of those go to the other team sometimes. So it's been really interesting to watch. It's only 12 games, and we'll see if he fits into the structure of the team better going forward. But he just seems to be on his own game plan, and a lot of times that's a good thing, and sometimes it's not.
Mike, the Stars' power play running at 30.8%. That's the best in the NHL. I'm just curious, from your observation, what have you seen with the unit with the man advantage that's just working tremendously?
They've earned it. Lindy, I believe, and again, this all kind of happened at one time, but Lindy was one of the guys who kind of pioneered the drop pass in the last year or two, and I know fans hate it because it can create shorthanded goal situations, but they've kind of got that down now so that Sagan or Klingberg or Spezza will take the puck, and basically, you know, the way that they have the motion going up ice on the entry, they find that seam. And so when, you know, when they drop it back to Spezza or Sagan or Klingberg, that guy has a seam to get into the zone. So then they get into the zone, and I mean, they set up camp. There's not a lot of times it just gets shot down to the other end. And they have enough skill now where a lot of people were focusing on Sagan's one-timer in the left circle. Well, now Radulov has a one-timer in the right circle. Or he'll just put a shot on goal, or he'll do something goofy over there. And so now Radulov takes attention, and then all of a sudden you see the PK creep over to his side of the ice, and then boom, a pass goes through, and Sagan's wide open for the one-timer. And all of those elements have kind of just come together in these 12 games. You know, whether other teams scout them well enough to take away those things, we'll see. But right now, all of that stuff is working really well on the first unit. Second unit, hot and cold. It's getting better. But, you know, that first unit is just clicking right now. They're getting in the zone cleanly. They're setting up, and they have some really good weapons.
A couple more for you, Mike. Mike Hajka of the Dallas Morning News joining us on the program. Ben Bishop, obviously brought over from Tampa Bay in order to solidify the goaltending, which had been a black hole in Dallas for the last couple seasons. Your impressions about Bishop thus far this year? He started 10 of the 12 games for the Stars thus far.
Yeah, he carries himself like a top 10 goalie. And I think that's important. I think there is a lot of confidence in that position that emanates to, you know, the rest of the team. I think he's also playing in front of a better structured team than Niemi and Lettinen were playing in front of last year or behind. So he's just good. He is big. He is steady. He lets the puck hit him. He reduces rebounds pretty well. Honestly, he's a great puck handler, but the real couple of times he's gotten in trouble this year is when he gets happy feet and starts wanting to play the puck too much and starts coming out of the net. He's gotten caught behind the net a couple of times on goals. He missed a poke check on another one. So, you know, there are little things in his game that get a little too aggressive at times, but that's what makes him him. And I think he's great. His personality is fantastic. He wants to be a member of the team. He wants to be a leader of the team. And you don't find that with goalies very much. But he is, he's outspoken. He interacts with his teammates well. He talks on the ice a ton. So all of these things are very good. And, you know, the Stars are hoping that you know, all of this mixes together and that when they do get to the playoffs, if they do get to the playoffs, they'll be a much different team than they've been in the playoffs in the past.
Last one for you, Mike. Obviously, Ben, Sagan, Radulov, if he's playing up with them, that's an enviable top three for any team in the league. Secondary scoring hasn't really been there for the Stars yet this year. Any concerns within the organization that they need to get that going, or they figure that'll just come naturally?
No, definitely concerns. I think that's why Jason Dickinson got called up. Stephen Johns had the concussion, so they had only seven defensemen. Now that he's coming back, they have an extra, so they sent Julius Honka down, basically with the whole thought of bringing Jason Dickinson up. Jason Dickinson is first-round draft pick, has played well in the minors, probably ready for this opportunity. I'm guessing, because he wasn't at practice today in Kelowna, but I'm guessing that he'll center the second line and they'll move Spezza to the right wing. And that move has been made directly to address the lack of secondary scoring. Now, will they do more? Will they do less? You know, we'll see. The one good thing about all this is that they do have a history of guys who have scored in double digits. Antoine Roussel is a double-digit goal guy. Devin Shore last year had, I don't remember what it was, Brett Ritchie had, you know, 16. Matthias Janmark in his year had 15. Radek Fox has a 12 or 13 goal scorer. So they've got five or six guys who have a history of being able to score in double digits. It's just a matter of getting, you know, getting them going and getting the proper line chemistry to you know, get back to that those numbers where they're starting to score goals.
Mike Hyka is with the Dallas Morning News. He covers the Dallas Stars. He's a good friend of the program. Mike, always appreciate your time and your insight. Thanks for joining us.
All right, we'll talk to you soon.
Take care, Mike. Thanks again. When we come back, we talk about NHL head coaching candidates who currently don't have a job. Are they waiting in the wings? That's up next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
It's not been a good day. I lost my glasses early this morning. It's not always whether you win or lose. It's whether you're winning or losing.
It seemed like your third line had a really great game tonight.
Who was that?
The Stoll, Williams, King line.
Yeah, they were good.
Score to win. Can't win nothing. Like to score more than one goal. Score two.
Is that it? Thanks.
It's a dry wit.
It's the best.
From Daryl Sutter. A very, very dry wit, but that was a little glimpse of some of the Sutterisms that we've been missing out on since his dismissal as Los Angeles Kings head coach. He was always entertaining when it came to his dealings with the media. Not really revealing much, clearly, in those clips, but entertaining in a sort of sadistic way at the same. Welcome back to NHL This Week. This segment brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. For more information and to make your teeth ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. So the time of the year, now that we're into November, where usually we see head coaching decisions and changes maybe begin to be made. Last year it was Gerard Gallant. He got the axe in November. Remember the imagery of him standing outside of the arena in Raleigh, North Carolina, waiting for a cab.
The van?
Yeah, the van pulled up. It was an awkward image portrayed on that day in Raleigh, North Carolina. A number of coaching candidates, currently not head coaches, in the NHL and TSN.ca's, and I guess TSN's, Frank Saravelli going through the list of coaches who might end up being available. I think the coach who's on the biggest hot seat right now is Alain Vigneault of the New York Rangers. We'll talk about the Rangers' struggles in hour number two tonight. But Daryl Sutter is certainly one of those coaches who has the pedigree as a champion, as he, and is sitting at home. And to me, he'd be the perfect coach for a team that is looking for a bit of a, that has real serious playoff aspirations, maybe Stanley Cup aspirations, but just needs a new voice in the room to maybe get them over that hump. And I don't know if that team exists this year, because, I mean, I haven't quite seen it yet about a team that, you know, that's struggling to get there, but Daryl Sutter would certainly be a hot coaching candidate if anybody is looking for a coach this season.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, Drew. And when you look at Dave Tippett and Daryl Sutter, those are the two biggest names out there, guys. And for good reason. I mean, Daryl Sutter has the Stanley Cup pedigree. Dave Tippett obviously always got the most out of those Arizona Coyotes teams, mm-hmm. even though over the last couple of years the Coyotes have been pretty bad. You remember what he did back in 2012 when he took the Coyotes to the Western Conference Final against, yeah. ironically enough, staff, the Los Angeles Kings, right? They won the cup that year. But when you're talking about some of these coaching candidates, you hear Jim Montgomery's name mentioned a lot, Sean. He obviously won the national championship with the University of Denver last year. You hear David Quinn with that powerhouse Boston University program. But when you're talking about some of these coaching candidates, you wonder if the fit is there with the team, right? And, you know, you mentioned Alain Vigneault. I think especially with the New York Rangers, by the way, we talked about it last week, Claude Julien is not going anywhere.
In Montreal.
We know Marc Bergevin is not going anywhere. Jeff Molson has already given him basically his stamp of approval going forward, and we know he's under contract for very many more years to come. But when you're talking about some of these other coaches that are out there, the New York Rangers guys, we know that, sure, they have some, you know, exciting young prospects in the system, guys like Elias Anderson and Philip Chytil. I don't know how to pronounce his name, but he's obviously a Czech Republic prospect that the New York Rangers are very high on. But when you're talking about the Rangers, this is a win-now team. When you have Henrik Lundqvist, who's now in his mid-30s, mm-hmm. you know that this isn't a team, you know, that's going to go through a slow rebuild. It's either make the playoffs and go on a run, or you're going to see a rebuild, right? And that defense has struggled all year. They thought that bringing in Kevin Shattenkirk for Dan Girardi was going to solve all of that. But back to the coaches, I mean, when you're talking about a guy like Dave Tippett, his track record speaks for himself. So for me, he'd probably be at the top of that list. But we've heard those names kind of, you know, creep up around this time. Sheldon Keefe is another guy, American Hockey League coach. As you mentioned, Adam Oates is a guy. We know that he struggled last time he was an NHL head coach with the Washington Capitals, Sean. But there's certainly no shortage. I mean, there's only 31 head coaching positions in the NHL. I mean, that's Captain Obvious speaking. But the reality is there's no shortage of guys that you can make an argument for being kind of the next in line, right?
Well, Sean, you know, absolutely, as you're 100% right. But if you're currently, I mean, I don't see any of these coaches who are currently, you know, employed. Not necessarily employed as a head coach in the NHL or the AHL. But, you know, I don't see a guy like Jim Montgomery, who is with the University of Denver, up and leaving the team mid-season to take over a team. He's a coach who will be hired in the summer,
yeah,
I think.
That's a good point.
Yeah, and a guy like David Quinn at Boston University, another name that's been mentioned, he's not going to leave his college at this time of the year. If you're looking for a coach right now, I think you're looking for a guy who is recently been fired by a different NHL team.
Yeah, and Dan Bylsma is another guy.
Dan Bylsma sticks out to me.
He was in Buffalo mm-hmm. last year, of course. You know, Daryl Sutter, we mentioned. As you mentioned, Dave Tippett. Guys who have long coaching pedigrees who are currently, you know, under contract technically to another team, but have been fired by that team and would be an easy transition to a new team, sort of like Paul Maurice was when he came to the Winnipeg Jets. He was working in television at the time. He's got a head coach's pedigree, but he wasn't obligated to another organization. You know, Sheldon Keefe, as the head coach of the Toronto Marlies in the AHL, isn't going to up and leave the Marlies for another NHL team, you know, 20 games through the season. I just don't see it logically, logistically being able to work.
You'd have to get permission from the team, right?
Yeah, and why would the Leafs want to? I mean, you can't think about the disarray that would cause throughout mm-hmm. your organization. That's why I think at this stage, you know, guys who are getting hired, you're looking at either promoting internally through an organization or you're looking at the Bylsma, Tippett, Sutter trio.
Yeah, I'm just looking at, like, Dan Bylsma is working as an analyst for the NHL Network right now. So, yeah. Like you talked about Paul Maurice coming out of the media, and Dan Bylsma has had success both in the East, maybe not with Buffalo, but with the Penguins. He's also been known to come in and be able to turn a team around, coming in with the Penguins and winning the Stanley Cup in his very same year. Obviously, a very, very different amount of talent on the roster, we'll say.
Mm-hmm. Well, anytime you got guys them Crosby and Malkin, it makes it for an appealing job.
Precisely. However, he's comfortable in the East, and he knows how to structure teams that somehow have kind of deviated from a defensive shell, we'll say. And, you know, it's easy to employ the offense, but they got to shore up their defense in New York. That's what the main focus. They got to help out Henrik Lundqvist. They got to keep those pucks out of the net.
And that's why I think Sean, to your point, I think when you're talking about Dave Tippett and Daryl Sutter, when you're talking about the New York Rangers, and Larry Brooks wrote about this earlier this week for the New York Post. He was saying basically Alain Vigneault, he could have one or two games left. Obviously, last night saved him. They were down 4-2 against the Golden Knights. Uh-huh. They score four goals in the third period. It gives him a little bit more of a leash. But when you're talking about Daryl Sutter and Dave Tippett, what are they really known for? They're really known for their systems and the way they're able to implement a defensive style of play, right? Mm-hmm. And obviously, you know, there is offense in the teams they've coached. But when you're talking about Daryl Sutter, I mean, the LA Kings were a top defensive team year after year. It was really the staple of those teams that won Stanley Cup championships, led by Jonathan Quick in net. So for me, Dave Tippett makes a lot of sense in New York. But obviously, Lindy Ruff, we talked about it last week. Frank Saravelli had him on the list. Lindy Ruff was an NHL coach for 19 years.
And he's the assistant coach right now in New York under Alain Vigneault.
Right, so it makes a lot of sense. And I mean, when you're talking about this Rangers team, do you want to have an interim head coach or do you really want to bring someone in similar to what Columbus did with John Tortorella? Right, so there's a lot of question marks. It's almost, you know, a little bit surprising that, you know, 12-13 games into the season, a month into the season, I should say, we haven't had any coaches fired, because over the last two or three years we've had coaches fired in October, it seems like, every year. And this year, really, with the exception of Alain Vigneault, I think he's really the only coach that you could look to and say he's on the hot seat. I wouldn't put really too many other coaches in there.
Let me throw a name at you. They're currently 5-6-1 on the season. Their defensive game has really fallen apart. The Washington Capitals, they're struggling, and their head coach, Barry Trotz, is in the final year of his contract.
I wouldn't put Barry Trotz in that category, and that's just my opinion, and you might disagree with me, Drew, but when you're talking
about... I've never disagreed with you once.
Well, when you're talking about Barry Trotz, though, right, I mean, we know his pedigree with the Nashville Predators. They were perennial Stanley Cup playoff team, not a Stanley Cup winner, but they made the playoffs year after year. Alongside his good friend David Poile. But when you're talking about that Capitals team, I think it was maybe underappreciated how much they really lost there, not just on the back end, but when you're talking about guys like Marcus Johansson, Justin Williams. So I do think that Brian McClellan is going to be a little bit more patient with Barry Trotz. And you know, they've got some injuries there. Andre Burakovsky's injured right now. But when you're talking about Barry Trotz and that situation, just my opinion, I think they're going to wait it out a little bit more. I think he's safe for at least another year or two.
He's not under contract after this year.
Well, I know, but I don't think that he's going anywhere.
You don't
put it that way.
Fair enough. That's a perfectly reasonable point of view. That's the other team besides the Rangers right now that I would keep an eye on. I mean, we know how you know the significant struggles of a team like the Arizona Coyotes, but they just hired their head coach. They're not going to get rid of Rick Tocchet, you know, 13 games into the season.
I assumed they would struggle a bit this year. It's no surprise that
they also can't afford to pay a coach to not coach for them. They're already paying. I mean, they paid out Dave Tippett a lot of money, and that's a team that, I mean, I don't think I need to tell anybody, isn't a huge revenue generator. The only other team I'd keep an eye on, the Edmonton Oilers, maybe Todd McClellan, 3-6-1 through their first 10 games in Edmonton. If that continues to struggle, maybe Daryl Sutter, an Alberta boy.
Oh.
Anyway, Stephen Wino of the Associated Press is up next. We might even ask him about his opinion on this topic. You're listening to NHL This Week, hour number two, up next on TSN 1290. Hour number two of NHL This Week starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Sean Assor, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us in studio via text message. Send your texts to 1290-90. Standard messaging rates apply. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Associated Press, he covers the NHL and the Washington-based teams. We're pleased to welcome to the program Stephen Wino. Stephen, good evening. Thanks very much for joining us. Stephen, are you there?
I am. Good evening, guys. How you doing?
Good. How are you, Stephen?
Doing very well.
That's good. Thanks for joining us on this Wednesday evening. Look around the NHL a little bit. We were talking last segment about the New York Rangers and their struggles. You know, if they didn't make that comeback last night against the Vegas Golden Knights, they were down 4-2 to the Golden Knights on home ice. If they didn't come back last night, do you think that Alain Vigneault's job would have been in severe jeopardy this morning?
Yes, I believe Elaine Vigneault would have been fired this morning, and Lindy Ruff would have taken over as interim head coach of the New York Rangers. And I do think that he's not out of the woods at this point. Henrik Lundqvist is not playing the kind of goaltending we expect out of him. The blue line that was supposed to have been shored up by re-signing Brennan Smith, by signing Kevin Shattenkirk, has not been very good. Some of this blame certainly belongs in the front office in terms of trading Derek Stepan and not having the cap space there. But this is certainly a rough situation and a hot seat for Elaine Vigneault right now, unless the Rangers get their act together against someone better than an ECHL-caliber goaltender.
Stephen, I think you'd agree that the Pittsburgh Penguins are still a top team, not only in the Eastern Conference, but the entire NHL. It was just 3 days ago that they came into Winnipeg and the Jets whooped them 7-1. What do you make of the fact that the Pittsburgh Penguins have already been defeated pretty badly on three separate occasions, including the second game of the season when they were whooped 10-1 by the Chicago Blackhawks?
I take it that they have no goaltending depth whatsoever in the organization anymore, and it's the reason why Jimmy Rutherford wanted to keep Marc-Andre Fleury for as long as he did and managed to, because when you have these back-to-back situations and you don't have stable goaltending, the first two times it was Antti Niemi getting lit up, the third time it was Matt Murray playing back-to-back nights and getting lit up, and you expect this out of teams on the second half of back-to-back to struggle, but when a team struggles and you have goaltending contributing to those struggles, it's not going to help. And I'm not really, terribly concerned about the Penguins in the long term, but if they can't get any kind of stable goaltending, whether it's from Tristan Jarry or Casey DeSmith or another move behind Matt Murray, this is going to keep happening in back-to-back games. It's just they don't have the goaltending to even keep up with NHL opponents right now, other than playing Matt Murray to death. And if they do that, they're not going to be able to make a Stanley Cup run as they did last year when Murray and Marc-Andre Fleury were splitting duties. And that would be my biggest concern right now for Pittsburgh.
Stephen, we had Barry Trotz on the station about a couple weeks ago, prior to the start of the regular season. He talked about, with all the losses to the Capitals roster, that Andrei Burakovsky is going to have an increased role and there's going to be a lot more pressure on his shoulders to create offensively. How impactful is this injury to the Caps roster with him out 6 to 8 weeks now?
You know what? He wasn't playing very well when he was healthy. So I don't want to say that it's been a devastating injury, because he hadn't gotten his act together very much early in the year. Wasn't scoring at the level that the Capitals, frankly, are going to need him to score at now that you're losing a Justin Williams, you're losing a Marcus Johansson, that you have so many goals to kind of make up for. But it's the trickle-down effect that hurts the Capitals so much that when you don't have an Andrei Burakovsky in your top six, you're counting on a Devontae Smith-Pelly or a Tom Wilson or a Jacob Vrana, those kind of guys who should not have to be forced into those big roles to fill it. And Andrei Burakovsky, for whatever his struggles were early in the year, is an NHL top six forward. He knows how to play well with good players. Barry Trotz put him with Nicholas Backstrom and TJ Oshie during the playoffs last season, and deservedly so, moving Alex Ovechkin down the lineup based on their respective play. But Andrei Burakovsky being out of the lineup and being out of the lineup long-term has done the same thing to the forward core as Matt Niskanen's long-term injury has done to the defense, is that you push guys up the lineup into spots they're not comfortable with, and therefore you're really testing depth for a team that's lost a lot of it, and especially in free agency.
Stephen Wino is our guest on NHL This Week. Stephen covers the NHL for the Associated Press. Stephen, sticking with the Washington Capitals, certainly a slow start to their year, 5-6-1 through their first 12 games of the season. What moves, if necessary, can Brian McClellan make, given how tight this team is to the salary cap?
I'm not sure Brian McClellan can do much of anything at this point. And we've seen it already in them picking up or promoting someone like an Anthony Peluso, them having to stick with a guy like an Aaron Ness. They don't have options right now. And even with LTIR relief, that's only going to be temporary with Matt Niskanen out, as long as Andrei Burakovsky is out, that there's not much Brian McClellan can do to fix this team. Going into the year, we thought maybe Philip Grubauer at the trade deadline could be valuable in trading for another defenseman, in theory, another top four defenseman, because Philip Grubauer is going to be a restricted free agent again next summer and will have significant value in the offseason next year. But if they have both of their goaltenders in the minor leagues right now, Phoenix Copley and Vitek Vanacek injured, they can't make that move and don't have the salary cap space to make that move either, unless a team is willing to retain some level of salary. So at this point, it's the Capitals needing to stay afloat with the personnel they have, because no help, no reinforcements or cavalry are coming down the road anytime soon.
Steven, 1 month into the season, is there a better story for you than Steven Stamkos coming back from that knee injury from last year, leading the league in points with 24 points in 13 games, and his Tampa Bay Lightning are first place in the Eastern Conference?
Man, it's been fun to see this, to see Steven Stamkos and Nikita Kucherov do their thing in Tampa Bay for the first month of the season. Two teammates leading the league in scoring right now. And Steven Stamkos did this at the start of last year. As hard as it is to remember that a year ago, but when he was hurt with that devastating knee injury, he was a point-a-game player, and he's better than that now. And Nikita Kucherov, Alex Ovechkin just said, told me yesterday, he will be one of the best players in hockey within 2 or 3 years. And he may be underestimating that, because Nikita Kucherov is one of the best players in hockey right now. And when you have defenses having to stop Kucherov or Stamkos and having to pick your poison, it's really tough. And this is the team that if you get Andrei Vasilevsky playing to his capabilities or playing to the potential that everyone has thought he can play to, a guy like Mikhail Sergachev on the blue line, a deep team that has some role players, has some playoff experience, they're going to be fun to watch the rest of the season, and they're going to be really dangerous in the Eastern Conference playoffs this spring.
Steven, sticking in the Metro, I want to talk a little with Flyers with you. It's fun to just watch guys, you know, who go before and after Jets draft picks, and I'm focusing on Sean Couturier in that 2011 draft. Here's a guy that's been promoted to top-line center on the Flyers. He's excelling. He's second in the team, 1 point behind Jake Voracek at 15. Is this a guy who's just really blossoming under the opportunity he's been given in Philly?
Yeah, and it wouldn't have been surprising at all, obviously, if the Jets had taken Sean Couturier instead of Mark Scheifele. And as well as Scheifele has played in Winnipeg, we all thought at the time that Sean Couturier was a top five pick, let alone a top seven or eight pick in that draft. What Sean Couturier has done is outplayed what his expectations were. Certainly when you look at him over the last several years, you're thinking he's a really good third-line center. And if you have two great centers ahead of him, that's exactly where you want him to be. But he does have that scoring potential, and Dave Haxtell took a big risk in putting Claude Giroux on the left wing, a position he never played before in his career, played a little bit of right, played a lot of center. And to put Sean Couturier there with two skilled players, you need somebody on that line to shoot and to be able to score goals, because Voracek and Giroux are both pass-first kind of players. And it worked for Giroux when he was on center and had a guy like Jaromir Jagr on the wing who wanted to shoot, or he had a Scott Hartnell who wanted to shoot. And Sean Couturier has filled that role very well. He's a great penalty killer, a really, really, really good face-off guy, a responsible two-way player. And something Barry Trotz said today is a lot more teams are going power against power. And when you have a guy like Sean Couturier who can produce offensively and be a stopper, that's a big asset for a team like the Flyers.
Steven, in all your years of covering hockey, have you seen anything like we're seeing from the Vegas Golden Knights and their goaltending situation, having to call up Dylan Ferguson from the Western Hockey League because they have three goalies already injured this early in the season?
It's so wacky, and I'm sure George McPhee regrets trading Calvin Pickard to Toronto for a draft pick, because essentially you're giving a guy a chance to go to another organization when he's not in your plan, rather than stash him with the Chicago Wolves to the AHL. But to not have Pickard and then to see all of these injuries go down, this is absurd. This is getting to a point of ridiculousness now, where when you have a guy like Maxime Lagasse having to play in an NHL game and Dylan Ferguson getting called up from Kamloops out of nowhere after the injury is absurd. And I think it's finally to the point now that George McPhee is going to have to make a move unless Marc-Andre Fleury is ready to return. And Gerard Gallant has said he is essentially day-to-day. He's traveling with the team. So we could see Marc-Andre Fleury back sooner than later. But when you've got a concussion and a guy who, at his age, you don't want to risk anything like that, especially for a face of the franchise, a guy who has done as much as Marc-Andre Fleury has in his career, to be playing games in October or November or December. But the Vegas Golden Knights, I do think George McPhee and that front office owe the players something to be able to have competitive goaltending, because this is one of the more fun stories we've seen in the NHL in recent years. And to see it kind of at least peter out because of some goaltending injuries and really running out of capable NHL goaltenders would be a very, very sad sight.
Speaking of fun stories, Steven, the Los Angeles Kings, a team most people thought were on the downturn, are 9-2-1 so far this year. And the New Jersey Devils, a team not that far away from you, are 8-2 so far this season. Which of those two teams is more surprising to you?
I think Jersey is more surprising, and I think the Kings are more sustainable in terms of their long-term success. And if Corey Schneider improves on his play so far this season, New Jersey can absolutely make the playoffs, and there's enough young talent there, and I think John Hines is considered one of the best coaches around in the line of someone like a Bill Peters in getting the most out of his talent available. And that includes a blue line that's very suspect, that's gotten a lot of help out of Will Butcher. But there's an excitement around the Devils and a bunch of changes that they've made, and Ray Shiro has kind of made in getting Nico Hischier in there, Marcus Johansson. But the Kings, this is a team that's for real. If Jonathan Quick stays healthy, the LA Kings are certainly have cycled over enough young talent in the Tyler Toffolis, the Tanner Pearsons. You have Mersch. You have other guys in the system there, along with your blue line where you've got a Jake Muzzin and a Drew Doughty and Alec Martinez and those guys who have been through playoff experiences and know the deal, that when you now infuse them with a coach who's very popular and maybe the personality opposite of Daryl Sutter and John Stevens, can really make some noise in the Western Conference. It'll be interesting to see between them and the Anaheim Ducks who comes out on top in that Pacific division, assuming the Edmonton Oilers don't come back to life at some point soon.
Well, Steven, sticking with the New Jersey Devils, how did you think Brian Gionta, former New Jersey Devil, looked sporting those new USA Hockey Olympic jerseys?
Well, the jerseys may not have looked so great. Brian Gionta playing on the team, a really cool story. I mean, he and Ryan Malone, who's playing in the AHL now for Iowa, I think are both going to be on this team. And it is cool to see a guy like Brian Gionta, an older veteran who has not gotten the chance to play in these tournaments a whole lot because he's not among the best American players, but a guy who really wanted a chance and is now skating with the Rochester Americans to be able to play at the Olympics. And the U.S. does need scoring. You do need guys, leadership guys who have been in the NHL to go along with a lot of these European veterans. And Brian Gionta makes a lot of sense to wear the C for the United States come February.
Last one, Steven. Houston or the Dodgers tonight? Who do you have in Game 7?
I'll take the Dodgers, and a great story with Yu Darvish coming back after his rough game the other night.
There you go. Steven Wino talks hockey, talks baseball. You can even talk football if we wanted to. Steven, appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us this evening.
Thanks, gentlemen. Talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon, Steven. Take care. When we come back, we talk more about the Rangers. Are they on the verge of doing something big to shake up that roster? That's up next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. 20 minutes past the hour, you're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Remember, if you're looking for a place to watch the Jets games, perhaps tomorrow night's game against the Stars, puck drop at Bernstein's is 7 p.m. It's hashtag hockey night at Bernstein's. All the games on their big screen TVs can settle in. It's soup season, so you can settle in, have a nice bowl of soup with your Illegal Curve sandwich, and enjoy some good old-fashioned hockey action at Bernstein's Deli, online bernsteinsdeli.com. Continuing our conversation about the New York Rangers, Elliot Friedman sort of went through a very good synopsis of the Rangers' struggles earlier today, and Bob McKenzie was on our sister station, or pardon me, this is Pierre LeBrun talking about the Rangers' struggles and how bad things are in New York. He was on our sister station in Vancouver. Here's what Pierre LeBrun had to say.
Pierre, I do want to talk about Alain Vigneault in New York. Karen brought this up earlier in the show. How close is he from getting shown the door?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if anyone really knows that unless, you know, ownership would tell you that. And I would tell you that the sense I get from talking to people around there is that they can't keep losing. Obviously, they came back to win last night. Huge third period with four goals against the Golden Knights. And, of course, normally you'd say, well, wild expansion. But I think we know by now that any win over Vegas isn't taken for granted, that's for sure. But it certainly feels like, you know, the clock seems to be on Alain Vigneault if they don't show a real spark here. But again, that's just a field thing. I mean, no one connected to the Rangers is saying that for sure.
That's Pierre LeBrun talking about the New York Rangers and their coaching situation. Let me ask you guys this. If Alain Vigneault is not long on the job in New York, is Lindy Ruff the right guy to replace him, or do they need to bring in some fresh blood from outside the organization, somebody who can come in with a with an unjaundiced point of view of the team to be able to really assess what they have in New York.
Well, this is Lindy Ruff's first year with the Rangers. And, I mean, really, if you think he's the right guy or you think he's not the right guy, it's subjective. I don't know if he's the right guy or not. I honestly don't, Drew. I'll tell you this much. I think I have a lot of respect for Lindy Ruff as a head coach. But, again, it goes back to what we were talking about during the first hour. I think you can make an argument for Dan Bylsma. You can make an argument for Daryl Sutter. You could make an argument for Dave Tippett. You see where I'm going with this, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it remains to be seen. I do think that this roster is more talented than their record would indicate, right? You mentioned they've only won four games, and they almost lost last night to the Vegas Golden Knights. And granted, the Vegas Golden Knights have surprised most of us, and they're a pretty darn good team. But that's a team that, in your situation, you have to beat them. And they did, but they shouldn't have let it get to that point.
You can't go down 4-2 to them,
exactly,
when they're playing Mr. Civ in that. I mean, all due respect to Maxime Lagacé, nobody knows who you are, and you're playing on the road in New York. It's not it's a game the Rangers...
Well, you just mentioned it's a home game, too.
Yeah.
Right? And the New York Rangers have struggled on the road and at home. And, you know, you look at this team, and we all know that, you know, the Derek Stepan trade was made for salary cap reasons. And they traded Antti Raanta as part of that, brought in Andrei Pavlik. Really, to me, though, it's more so how this team has changed from a team that was really built from the goal out. And, you know, by that, what I mean is this defense, quite frankly, is not as good as it was 3 or 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think Henrik Lundqvist is as good as he was 3 or 4 years ago. And I'm not saying that Henrik Lundqvist can't turn his own personal season around, but when you look at the amount of shots, guys, that the Rangers are giving up, it doesn't matter if Henrik Lundqvist is in net or Carey Price, really. It's the same situation in Montreal, right? Many times this season, Henrik Lundqvist has basically been hung out to dry. And when you talk about Dan Girardi, and Dan Girardi kind of became a whipping boy in New York because of his lack of foot speed, I should say, and they brought in Kevin Shattenkirk. Kevin Shattenkirk has struggled big time.
Mm-hmm.
And he scored some power play goals yesterday, but he has struggled in his own zone, and they thought that would make them quicker. But when you're talking about, you know, some of the other guys they've brought in here, Brendan Smith has struggled on the top pair with Ryan McDonagh. We know what Ryan McDonagh brings, and I really like Brady Shea, mm-hmm, and apparently there are some other teams, including the Montreal Canadiens, that are interested in Brady Shea. That's why, you know, they were at the Montreal-Ottawa game and potentially scouting forwards and defensemen. But when you're talking about this group, Sean, I mean, you think back to that group when the New York Rangers went to the Stanley Cup final against the Kings, and this was a formidable group of defensemen, right? Ryan McDonagh, Dan Girardi, Mark Stahl, Dan Boyle.
Mm-hmm.
And now this is a pretty pedestrian group of defensemen.
Yeah, you look at the back end, and Ryan McDonagh said it yesterday, it was yesterday post game. He was just saying how, regardless of the win, the whole team needs to play better, and they're just not getting the results that they need. And we've seen the frustration kind of boil over already with Henrik Lundqvist. And we talked about this in the season preview show, that they're going to need to provide him with some run support, because it's going to be a big test for his shoulders, for the season. And they're just not getting it done right now. And Steven Waino, less than a half hour ago, said that victory last night literally saved Alain Vigneault's job. And it's a lot of question marks moving forward if this team cannot pull it together.
Well, let me ask you this. As you know, you have a New York Rangers team that has three unrestricted free agents at season's end: Rick Nash, Michael Grabner, and Nick Holden. Nash seems like he's destined to not be in New York next season. At what point in time do the Rangers put these guys up on the trade market, if they haven't already, to see what they can bring? I mean, Rick Nash isn't the same Rick Nash that he was, you know, Olympian, you know, for Team Canada, but he's still somebody who can certainly be valuable to an NHL team going forward.
Yeah, he could absolutely add value to any team in the National Hockey League. And when you talk about, you know, some of these pending UFAs, Nick Holden is more of a depth defenseman.
Yes, he's a depth defenseman. But he's a guy who gets you a draft pick at the trade deadline.
And Rick Nash could certainly bring a package, including a draft pick and players. But I don't think they're going to necessarily make any of those types of major moves at this point in the season. I think it'll be behind the bench first. But when you're talking about Rick Nash, I think, you know, are you going to be able to pay him what he wants, right? And a player like Rick Nash, even though his totals have struggled at times, his totals have fluctuated, I should say, at times, I think he's still a guy that's probably going to command $5 or $6 billion a year for his next contract.
And why would the Rangers pay
exactly.
that?
Exactly. Why does he deserve that?
Well, I mean, whether or not he deserves it, I mean, you know, he'll get it. He'll get something like it.
Think someone will pay Rick Nash $5 million?
Well, maybe $4 to $5, something like that. It's not important. The point is, the New York Rangers.
He's making almost $8 million right now.
I know, old contract. But I mean, the Rangers, if you're not at the point, they don't need a Rick Nash. They don't need a 34-year-old forward at that point in time. They probably don't need a 34-year-old forward this year. This is a team that really, you know, they're not a Stanley Cup contender. They're probably a fringe playoff team, and they need to sort of, and they've begun the process to some extent. They need to trade away whatever assets they can get to really start a rebuild and start a youth movement in New York, as opposed to being one of those teams that's sort of just a mushy middle sort of team.
Yeah, and to your point, I know that the Rangers really like Pavel Buchnevich, mm-hmm. and he's kind of replaced Rick Nash on that top line, right? And so when you're talking about, you know, who the Rangers could possibly move, Rick Nash, Drew, as you mentioned, is the obvious candidate because he's a pending UFA after the end of the season. But when you're talking about, you know, some of the untouchables, really I would say the only untouchables on this team, you're starting with Henrik Lundqvist. On defense, I would say the untouchables are Ryan McDonagh and Brady Shea. The Rangers don't want to trade Brady Shea unless they get a player that really makes them trade him. But when you're talking about up front, you're talking about Chris Kreider's untouchable, and most likely Mika Zibanejad is untouchable. Matt Zuccarello is another guy whose name has been thrown out there.
He has a year left after this season.
Yeah, and you know, Matt Zuccarello has had actually a pretty good start to the season, but he's a guy that might be able to be traded to help them up the middle, right? So there's a lot of moving parts here. The New York Rangers, I mean, if they don't get this together in the next week to 2 weeks, I wouldn't be shocked if Alain Vigneault loses his job. And I really like Alain Vigneault as a coach, but it's because where they are in their development as a team, right? The New York Rangers are a perennial playoff team, and right now, even though it's only early November, they're in serious danger of missing the playoffs.
Absolutely. It'll be interesting to keep an eye on the New York Rangers to see how their, well, the next really few weeks unfolds, because if things continue to go bad, you might be seeing, that's the hot, that's the odds-on favorite to have the first coaching change of the season. An update from Chavez Ravine. The Houston Astros jumping out to a first inning 2-0 lead on the Dodgers. An error by the Dodgers has given the Astros a 2-0 lead. Two outs in the first inning. Yu Darvish struggling so far. When we come back, Lou Korak, St. Louis Blues correspondent for NHL.com, joins us to talk about the surprising start to the season for the St. Louis Blues. That's up next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Bottom of the hour, you're listening to NHL This Week. Drew Mandel, Sean Assor, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome to the program Lou Korak. Lou is with NHL.com. He's the St. Louis Blues correspondent. His appearance on the show this evening is brought to you by Keener Jerseys, known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit Keener Jerseys online at KeenerJerseys.com. Lou, good evening and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Lou, if I had told you that the St. Louis Blues would be performing at the level that they're doing, 10-2-1 so far this season, most points in the NHL, tied for the most points with the Tampa Bay Lightning, with the litany of injuries that they've already suffered this year, how out to lunch would you tell me that I am for thinking that?
Well, I would have asked you if you want to put your life savings on that. it's a story. I mean, really, it is. You know, I never doubted that this team could be good. I just didn't know how good. And like you said, you know, you're already going up against the odds with so many obstacles that you have to overcome. You know, a couple of us were sitting in the press box after they beat Columbus on Saturday, and we're just kind of sitting there going, this team is 9-2-1. How? And somehow they're figuring it out. I mean, it's their best players are being their best players right now. I know it's a cliche, but it's true. They're getting extraordinary play from their defensemen, and in particular, they're providing basically the secondary offense, because up until a couple of games ago, basically their third and fourth lines were just that, third and fourth lines that have provided little to no offense, and that was basically coming from their defensemen. I believe they're still leading the league in goals scored this year. Carl Gunnarsson got one the other night, and that would be 14 for him right now, which is a heck of a pace for a group that's not necessarily known for its offensive prowess, especially when you trade away Kevin Shattenkirk, and their goaltending has been phenomenal. I mean, let's face it, Jake Allen is Jake Allen right now. He's gotten off to a great start, and Carter Hutton's given him three starts, and he's been phenomenal. He's got a 167 goals against and a 950 save percentage. So a little bit of everything right now, and that doesn't even include the special teams, which really hasn't been very good. If there's really been a sore spot in this team's lineup, it's been their special teams, and they're usually in the top 10 in both categories. So it's a little bit of an anomaly, but I'll tell you what, this team is playing with confidence, and they're just taking it game by game. Again, I know that's a cliche in itself, but they're not looking too far ahead. They're not looking too far behind. They just focus on the task at hand, and right now they're getting the job done.
Lou, today, as you know, the NHL announced that Jaden Schwartz was one of its three stars for the month of October, 17 points in 13 games. That puts him among the top scorers in the NHL for the first month of the season. Should any of us be surprised at how well Jaden Schwartz has been playing, considering that he's been so consistent for the Blues over the years?
Yes and no. I don't think you should be surprised by his work ethic. I mean, this guy, he really kind of anointed himself. And I talked to him a couple of days ago, just had a real extensive conversation with him about a number of things. He likes to consider himself a puck hound, and this opposing players just can't stand playing against this guy. I mean, he's relentless on the puck. He's going to do everything he can to chase it down. And once he gets it, you're going to have the darndest time trying to take it away from him. I mean, this guy is a worker bee to the core. I mean, he's one of the hardest workers I've seen in the league in a long, long time. The offense, he's got the capabilities, but, do we see it at this clip? Right now, if he continues on this pace, he's gonna shatter his personal best with 107 points. Do we see this continuing? Probably not, but, it's a great story right now, and I hate to think where this team would be without what he's been able to provide for him, because when you think of the St. Louis Blues, and again, you mentioned the injuries and some of the key guys that have been out, you're thinking, okay, they've got Vladimir Tarasenko, who's a guy that's going to provide you the offense, and then who? Who's going to give you some supplemental scoring behind him? And Jaden Schwartz has stepped up big time, and that line's been, since Mike Yeo put him together a couple of games ago, it's been phenomenal with Braden Schenn, Schwartz, and Tarasenko. And Schwartz and Tarasenko are familiar with each other because they've played together in the past, but adding Braden Schenn to that line, it's been pretty dynamic. And then you've also had another, really, really good top six line with Sobotka, Stastny, and Steen. And, they've held their own as well. So some good balance there. But, Jaden Schwartz is kind of the guy that stirs the pot. He gets the engine going. He gets the burners going for this team. And if he continues to play like this, this team, there's not going to be very many teams out there that are going to want to face the St. Louis Blues right now, because he's really leading by example.
Lou, just reading up on the Blues, and, we keep such a close eye on them because of Central Division opponents and such, and just a glowing review so far about a young 21-year-old defenseman named Vince Dunn. What have you seen out of him that's been allowing him to have apparently just a tremendous amount of success so far this season?
Well, he just continues to grow. I mean, he came into training camp and, had some ups and downs, which is understandable for a young guy that's looking for his first shot of making it into the NHL. And, to me, when you talk about a young player that's trying to break in as a forward or as a defenseman, I think it's much more difficult to break in as a defenseman. So, he had certainly had some struggles, but he also had his moments where he played really well, too, early on. And he just had, he just had to get reps, basically. He had to get minutes. He had to get shifts. And you learn on the fly. And I'll tell you what, he's been tremendous. Each game you watch him play, you can just see his confidence level continue to grow. He and Robert Bertuzzo have been a very, very solid third-D pairing for this team. And that's just it right there. They've had good balance among all their defensemen. And, you know, when you start talking about getting down to that, maybe that, you know, third unit, might wonder if you're going to be able to exploit some deficiencies there, but that just hasn't been the case. And, you know, he's very poised with the puck. Right now, you know, he's not very overwhelmed out there. He's not one of those kids that's going to be, you know, a deer in headlights, wondering what's going to go on next. He's becoming very instinctive now in what he does, and not making really many mistakes out there. The offense is going to come. He's known as an offensive defenseman. He's got two goals so far, so really he hasn't put up a whole lot of points, but that's going to come, and that's just going to come with repetitions with him. But they've been very pleased with him so far, and it's going to present an interesting dilemma because Jay Bouwmeester still hasn't returned to the lineup, and he started skating a couple of days ago. When he's ready and able to come back healthy for this team, Mike Yeo's going to have a decision to make as to who's going to come out of this lineup, because right now the sticks that are playing in there, nobody seems to want to be the one that's going to come out.
Lou Korak is our guest on NHL This Week. Lou covers the St. Louis Blues for NHL.com. Lou, you know, it wasn't that long ago, it was last season, but it wasn't that long ago really when, you know, Jake Allen was struggling so much for the Blues that they left him at home on that road trip that saw them come to Winnipeg, and they started Phoenix Copley instead of Jake Allen. You know, when he was going through those struggles, did you still think he could be as good of a goalie as he's shown that he is so far this season?
Yeah, listen, I've talked to a number of people, and being around Marty Brodeur, I mean, that's as good as it gets when you talk about advice about goalies. And I've had a number of chats with Marty about this stuff, and we talked about at the time about, you know, when Jake was having his struggles. Look, some of the best goalies, they all go through this stuff. Marty even admitted that he had stretches early in his career where he went through something like this and usually come out better for it. Jake Allen's one of those guys that doesn't get too overwhelmed by the situation. He understood that it was, you know, it was troubling, and confidence wise he was shaken, there's no doubt about it, but he never really showed it on the exterior. I think that was just something that he needed to go through, and he's come out. It basically, what you make of it is what's going to become of the situation, and he's made the most of it so far. You guys saw him, if you got a chance to watch that first-round series against Minnesota. I mean, he literally, to me, I think, you know, first and foremost, he was the biggest reason why they won that series in five games. That's how phenomenal he played. And, you know, he's a very confident guy and doesn't get really too flustered when things don't go his way. And I think that's the sign of a good goalie is a goalie has to have a short memory, and Jake Allen typically did, you know, displays those tendencies and habits of having a short memory if something doesn't go his way. And so far, you know, they've asked him to be the number one guy, and he's going to continue to be the number one guy here, and he's going to get the bulk of the games. And so far he's played about as, I don't want to, you know, I think he can be better. Sure. There've been stretches in his game where, he's been a little bit up and down early on, but so far very solid numbers, and you know, one of the reasons why this team's playing as well as it is. But you know, no, Jake Allen's not going to be a guy that's going to allow that stuff to get to him. And you know, another example was I think somebody had mentioned that you know, Carey Price was a guy that went through that, and look what he's going through in Montreal right now, you know, with that team. So all great goalies go through this stuff, and Jake Allen's only going to get better for it, and that's his biggest goal coming in. When I talked to him during the preseason, was he wants to be one of the best goalies out there, and he's going to do everything he can to be.
Lou, we're based in Winnipeg, so we always keep a close eye on Winnipegger Alex Steen. How has he looked since he came back from that hand injury?
Good, and they've needed him. I mean, he plays in all the big minutes for this team. He's going to play 20 minutes a night. You know, big on their special teams. He's going to help get that power play going, and he's going to help get that penalty kill going. Plays on that line with Stastny right now, and you know, he's a leader. He's a vocal leader on and off the ice, and it was tough getting him in when they did, because they brought him back in the game a couple of weeks ago against Chicago, and it basically started a stretch, you know, where you're working a guy in for the first time. They played three and four nights, and you know, that could be a little tough, that, you know, trying to break yourself in there, but he's been solid so far. He had a 4-point night a week or so ago in a game, and I know I don't want to say he was squeezing the stick a little bit, but I think that lifted a little bit of the burden off of his shoulders. He wants to get involved offensively and help this team out any way he can, but they use him in so many different situations that really getting him back into the lineup really helped stabilize their top six forwards. Because for a while there, they were scrambling as to who they were going to use. They were using some young guys up there. They had Tage Thompson, their number one pick in 2016, up here playing, and he was playing in a top six role. Sammy Blay, sixth round pick back in 2014, was up from the minors playing in a top six role too. So they had some young guys up there, but getting Steen back in has really helped stabilize those top six forwards.
Lou, it's always intriguing when players finish their playing careers and they progress into the coaching realms, and especially when you look at guys who are more like the sandpaper, meat and potato type players. I'm really curious as to how Steve Ott is approaching his new role as an assistant coach with the team and what you've seen out of that regard.
You know, when he made the decision that he was going to hang the skates up and go into coaching, I think you can tell that there was a peace of mind there, because I didn't expect it. To me, it came out of nowhere, and I think he's at peace with his decision, and he's relishing this role. I was watching actually practice yesterday, and he's out there on the whiteboard pointing out some tips and drills and whatnot and stuff like that, and he's having a good time with it. And again, I think he's at peace with his decision and really enjoying this role. And because there's a number of players that are still on this team that called him teammate, and I think that's helped make the transition smooth for him. He enjoyed his time here in St. Louis when he was here as a player, and didn't think twice about it when given the opportunity to get into the coaching ranks, whether he wanted to come back here or not. I think he and his wife and kids really liked it here, and so far it's been a good transition. And working with Daryl Sador and Craig Berube and with Mike Yeo and some of the other assistant coaches, David Alexander, the goalie coach, they've been a good group together so far. And Steve Ott's a guy that's going to keep things loose in the locker room too. He can be kind of the buffer between the head coach and the players, because he understands how the players feel. And again, he was a teammate with a lot of these guys. So I think he's a good guy to have around.
Lou, we'll let you go on this last question. Our old friend here in Winnipeg, Chris Thorburn, has played 5 games for the Blues. He looks like he's the quintessential 13th forward for the Blues so far this season. How is he fit in? How is he adjusting to his time in St. Louis after so many years here in Winnipeg?
I think he enjoys it. Again, like you said, he hasn't gotten a whole lot of action in the lineup, but I think he's okay with that. He understands what his role is on this team, and there's going to come a time where the Blues are going to need him in that fourth-line role. And the times that he has played, he's fit in with Scotty Upshaw and Kyle Brodziak. But right now, Dmitry Ashkin's been a guy that's kind of helped solidify that line with some offense here recently. And, there's going to come a time where they're going to run into some of these bigger physical teams. And Chris Thorburn's going to get his chance to get into the lineup and kind of provide some of that physicality that they may need. So it's one of those good soldier type of things where you put your work in. Nate Prosser's another one. He's only played in one game this year, another veteran guy. You just kind of continue to work hard and wait for your turn, and just wait till they knock on your door and say, hey, you're going to be in tonight. So it's been a good transition for him. He seems like a good guy to have in the locker room. I know Alex Pietrangelo spoke very highly of him, and having him in the locker room, just having his veteran voice there. And the guys have seemed to like him a lot. So he's fit in well so far. But as far as his on-play ice, it's to be determined yet, just because he hasn't had that many games yet.
Lou Korak covers the St. Louis Blues for NHL.com. Lou, always appreciate your time and your insight. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me. Take care.
Our pleasure, Lou. When we come back, we'll look around the NHL with some NHL news and notes. That's up next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
NHL news and notes.
Yes, and Michael Hutchinson specifically is in the American Hockey League. And in the last few days, there have been calls to Kevin Cheveldayoff of the Winnipeg Jets. We've seen a number of goalies injured around the league, some underperformance as well. And the feeling is he is a guy Winnipeg would be willing to move if they can find the right fit. He's making $1.3 million in the American Hockey League.
And that report from earlier in the week or over the weekend that Michael Hutchinson, Winnipeg Jets backup goaltender currently playing in the AHL, is reportedly on the trade block being sought after in trades. We talk about that next. Welcome back to NHL This Week. This segment of the show brought to you by our good friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. This weekend at Rumors, it starts tomorrow night. Jamie Kennedy, you know Jamie from the Scream movies. You've seen him really everywhere. Jamie Kennedy in town at Rumors this weekend. Tickets available, RumorsComedyClub.com. Don't miss out on seeing Jamie Kennedy.
Malibu's Most Wanted.
Malibu's Most Wanted. There you go. The Jamie Kennedy experiment. I mean, I can go on and on, but certainly quite the resume for Mr. Kennedy. He's at Rumors Comedy Club this weekend. Michael Hutchinson. If, you know, I have no reason to doubt that Kevin Cheveldayoff is indeed getting calls about him, should the Jets make that trade? Is that a trade the Jets are better off making than not making and holding on to Michael Hutchinson at this point? Has Eric, even if the Jets run into goaltending woes and injuries like we've seen in Vegas, for example, isn't Eric Comrie now a better option than Michael Hutchinson at this point, Ezzy?
Well, I mean, right now you have two goaltenders splitting the duties for the Manitoba Moose. I think Comrie's played 5 games and Hutchinson has gotten into 4 games. So I think you like to have two number one goaltenders playing for your American Hockey League team, but you do have Jamie Phillips waiting in the wings in the East Coast Hockey League. But when you're talking about the Vegas Golden Knights, I mean, we talked about it a little bit with Steven Waino. It looks like Marc-Andre Fleury is close to coming back to the lineup, so maybe that changes things. Oscar Dance, I don't think, is out long-term. Malcolm Subban might be out a little bit longer than the other two goalies. But when you're talking about the Vegas Golden Knights, they're probably willing to give up a draft pick to get Michael Hutchinson, and we know that the Vegas Golden Knights stockpiled draft picks not only during the NHL expansion draft, but during the NHL draft itself. So maybe you can get a draft pick for Michael Hutchinson, but it might have to be more than that because, you know, the Manitoba Moose are taking a step forward this year, I think. I mean, it's early in the season.
They're certainly more competitive.
They're better than they were last year, Drew. I think everyone agrees with that. And Eric Comrie should start the majority of games for the Manitoba Moose, but I think it's nice to have a guy like Michael Hutchinson who you know can play 25, 30 games, maybe even more than that if you need. So, you know, there's a lot of depth in the Winnipeg Jets organization right now. But again, I mean, if you're able to get, you know, maybe a second or third round pick from the Vegas Golden Knights. I don't know if they're willing to give that up. Maybe it's more like a third or fourth, but if you're Kevin Cheveldayoff, maybe you'd rather hang on to Michael Hutchinson and know that you have a nice 1-2 combo in the American Hockey League.
Sean, your thoughts? I mean, should the Jets, if they're, you know, what's too little to receive for Michael Hutchinson? And, you know, realistically, looking at what sort of, this is an AHL goaltender, a backup goaltender, what can the Jets realistically expect to ask for a guy who's going to be an unrestricted free agent at season's end?
Yeah, I can't see the Jets asking for anything higher than a third round pick. Michael Hutchinson is an NHL goaltender, but he's not a proven NHL goaltender. Like, he's got to go into whatever team is acquiring him, and he's going to have to play well. He's not going to be given anything. No one's going to bring in Michael Hutchinson to save the organization. It's more of almost a Band-Aid situation. But I can't foresee the Jets getting a second-round pick for Michael Hutchinson.
No, I'd be shocked as well. But if you're the Pittsburgh Penguins, wouldn't you prefer to have Michael Hutchinson than Tristan Jarry right now? I mean, he's come up to be the backup goaltender, and they were hoping that he was going to spend the majority of the year in the AHL. I mean, there's so many teams with backup goaltending and goaltending depth problems that this is a position of strength for the Jets. And I know it's not going to be a draft pick that changes the fate of your franchise, but isn't really anything better right now? Haven't you seen enough from Eric Comrie? And don't you want to see Jamie Phillips at the AHL level to determine what you have really with him? I mean, I think he's proven enough at the ECHL level that he probably deserves a step up as.
Right, and it's all speculative right now because we don't know what the Jets have been offered for Michael Hutchinson. But yeah, Drew, if they are offered something of substance, I think you look at doing it. And when you're talking about other goaltenders that are out there, Andrew Hammond is another guy mm-hmm. that's having a really good year in the American Hockey League for the Binghamton Senators. So maybe, you know, the Pittsburgh Penguins are looking at a guy like Andrew Hammond. But
yeah, Belleville, actually. They moved to Belleville.
Sorry, Belleville, yeah.
They have their home opener in Belleville, Ontario. So the Ottawa Senators franchise, just the AHL franchise, just moved down the road to Belleville for this season. They were in Winnipeg over the weekend.
Yeah, the Moose just played them, right?
That's right, and Andrew Hammond played well mm-hmm. for them, and he's healthy. He missed most sort of a large portion of last season with a torn labrum, if I'm not mistaken. So he had surgery on that, so he's been able to recover in that sense. So it's an interesting sort of keep an eye on Michael Hutchinson. You know he wants the opportunity to get back to the NHL. I don't know. This is a guy who didn't speak to the media for the longest time after being demoted by the Jets in training camp. I'm not even sure if he's spoken to the media yet. We'd have to ask our buddy Dave, who covers the Moose much closer than we do, if Michael Hutchinson has spoken about his emotions surrounding that, but certainly something to keep an eye on. On the injury side of things, the Bruins lose David Backes for 8 weeks after he has surgery to remove part of his colon. Which is certainly does not sound like a fun experience to go through at all. The Bruins, an average start to the year, 4-3-3, 11 points in 10 games for the Bruins. You know, the loss of Backes to the Bruins, is he significant?
Yeah, it's significant, and it's really unfortunate for Backes because his season didn't go how he wanted it to go last year, and you know he's only gone into 5 games so far for the Bruins. Obviously, you know Backes is not someone who the Bruins rely on for primary scoring. That falls to Brad Marchand and David Pastrnak, but certainly David Backes, you know, was a guy they brought in to kind of give them that physical element that I think they lost with Milan Lucic. But you know, it's a tough loss, but I think more so for him. Who's really trying to get his career back on track. I mean, he finished strong last year for the Bruins, but as you said, you know, this isn't a fun injury to have, and you know, he's going to have to wait a couple months to get back into the lineup.
Yeah, anytime you have surgery to remove part of your colon, I
and think about from a training perspective, too, how long it's going to take to just get your mobility and just the natural movements back. That area is it's a sensitive area.
I'm not a doctor, and I certainly wish all the best to David Backes in his hopefully a quick return to health. But never mind the hockey side of things. Anytime,
just daily functioning.
Yeah, anytime you have your part of your colon removed, you know, your health is first and foremost. Let's leave it there. But we're not done for this Wednesday evening. We got a special bonus segment coming up at 8 o'clock as we take you into the Manitoba Moose Hockey and the Moose pregame show as the Moose and the Bakersfield Condors are going to do battle at 8:30. So one final segment up next. It's a bonus 15 minutes of NHL This Week. You're live on TSN 1290. Grooving to get back into the show for one final segment here on this Wednesday evening. It sort of sounds like a little bit of Monster Mash.
I was going to say it sounds just like Monster Mash.
Okay, I just want to, it's an instrumental version of Monster Mash. I guess the he did the mash. She did the Monster Mash. A day after Halloween. Welcome back to NHL This Week. One final segment. Leading into the Moose and the Bakersfield Condors, our good buddy Mitch Peacock has the call coming up with the pregame show at 8:15, puck drop at 8:30 in Bakersfield as the Moose start a West Coast trip. The Bakersfield Condors, of course, the AHL affiliate to the Edmonton Oilers. So you can see a guy named Jesse Puljujarvi, who's not off to a great start in Bakersfield. A lot of talk that he might get the call-up, though, to help an Oilers team that has been struggling. Want to remind you to support our fine sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support them because they support Illegal Curve Hockey, and without their generosity, they would not the show would not be able to be, so support those fine local businesses. Let me ask you guys, Roy played the Monster Mash song. Did you see the Nick Bonino and his wife? Did you see their Halloween costume?
Yeah, that's amazing.
It was fantastic. Ezzy, did you see it?
Yeah, it was great.
That was, so for those who didn't see it, Nick Bonino, I guess the Predators, like most teams, had a Halloween party. And so Nick Bonino and his wife dressed up as autograph seekers. And they went up to all of their teammates in disguise and kept asking for autographs. And they had enlisted PK Subban to record the entire thing surreptitiously. So, and these costumes were so good that the players didn't even recognize Nick Bonino and his wife dressed up as these autograph hounds. And you might see that, you don't see them very often, but there's these people who stand outside, you know, the player's entrance, or they stand outside, you know, anywhere to get an opportunity to get a player's autograph. And Nick Bonino and his wife pulled it off. It was the most fantastic Halloween costume. It was terrific to watch the Predators players not even recognize their teammate and his wife as they were going through these motions. It was great, Sean.
Yeah, and it's probably, I'd love to be a fly on the wall to kind of watch their reactions, because Nick Bonino is a grown man.
Yeah.
His wife, a grown woman.
Yes.
And athletes are always open to signing autographs, but more so when it's children.
Yes.
And you know, so there's a grown man stalking all the players, and I'm sure he added some shtick to it. You know, I'm sure he was pushy and probably threw out a couple maybe nicknames or something that only like someone inside the team would know about. But yeah, it's amazing. And whenever the pranks are involved with Halloween, it's the best. You see the Ryan Reeves, Phil Kessel thing?
The Ryan Reeves, Phil Kessel thing was also fantastic. Yeah. Watch, I mean, anytime you get to see Phil Kessel's personality, I'd watch a show about Phil Kessel.
Did you see the two of them play basketball? The video of the two of them playing one-on-one?
I don't think so. I haven't seen that one yet.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That's also a good
one?
I'd watch a show about, I'd watch a 30-minute show about Phil Kessel, because, you know, obviously the Toronto media chewed him up and spit him out, and it seems more often than not they treated him unfairly in his time in Toronto. So when you get to see him and display his personality in a more relaxed fashion, where he's not sort of the sullen introvert Phil Kessel, when you see him with more of an extrovert, and you've seen him every now and then, you see it, and Ryan Reeves scared the dickens out of him. You know, when you know Phil Kessel opened the I think it was a hotel room door,
yeah,
or something, and Ryan Reeves was standing there wearing this scary mask that would make me afraid as at the same time, and Kessel just jumps back, and it was great to see that. That was a pretty funny one as well. And then I guess we're obligated to talk about Connor McDavid, because this is a controversy.
I
don't know, it's
silly.
So ridiculous. I mean,
it's so silly.
He wasn't, you know, advocating to support Donald Trump. He was just dressed as Donald Trump. It's, you know, I think a lot of people who may not necessarily be supporters of Donald Trump dressed as Donald Trump over Halloween. So maybe everybody just take a deep breath.
Other than his on ice, if you can read lips, what he says to Brandon Manning after the two of them met for the second time on the Flyers, has Connor McDavid ever said anything offensive or done anything offensive in the public eye? Like, it would be so out of character for him to just come out and offend the masses with this costume. It's so silly.
It is quite silly, the overreaction to that. In fact, there's actually a good article on theathletic.com, our good friend Eric Tehachik, writing today about sort of Connor McDavid and how he's not necessarily maturing, but he's getting more comfortable in his skin and in his role, and as a result showing some more personality. So that's if you are a subscriber to that, you can check it out at theathletic.com, and the good article from Eric Tehachik. The Penguins and the Oilers are meeting tonight for the second time in about a week or 10 days, and it's such a shame that their matchups don't get more notice. I mean, the NHL, I mean, this is a rant of mine that I've gone, Ezzy, you've heard this rant more than one time. Sean, you've heard it more than one time. The fact that the Penguins and the Oilers, or McDavid versus Crosby, is not getting the attention it deserves is such an absolute travesty.
It's a waste of talent is what it is.
Instead, so if you're watching tonight on NBC Sports Network, you're watching the Blackhawks and the Flyers.
Also a good game.
Well, I mean,
however,
it's a fine game, and they sure, you know, it's because Wednesday night is rivalry night.
Oh, wow.
And I'm going to talk about what just happened in the baseball game in a second. You know, Wednesday night is rivalry night.
Exactly.
But the Blackhawks and the Flyers are no rivals. They met in the Stanley Cup final how many years ago now? 6 years ago?
Sure.
Yeah, something like that. They're not rivals.
Yeah.
And you're promoting that game, and granted, they're two bigger U.S. markets, over a game between Crosby and McDavid, a game that casual hockey fans are interested in because it's the two best players in the game going head-to-head the last time they're going to do so, and you're burying that game, is just such an asinine decision that the NHL makes time and time again. It boggles my mind. As I mentioned, or Sean, you said, wow, three-run home run in Los Angeles. The Houston Astros have jumped out to a 5-0 lead over the LA Dodgers in Game 7. Yu Darvish is out of the game. He doesn't even go two innings. Goes one, I don't even know if he had an out in the second inning. But Darvish out of the game. The Astros have a 5-0 lead. And I'd say that's a secure lead, but we've seen how crazy the World Series has been. It's going to, I think nobody expects that lead to necessarily last, but a great start to Game 7 for the Houston Astros in Los Angeles, taking that 5-0 lead.
Yeah, I mean, to come out to a 5-0 lead in a World Series Game 7, you're pretty much sign sealing and delivering the championship. However, what we've seen from every single other game in this series, you get up to get a glass of water, you're missing a home run.
Basically.
That's happened to me twice.
Yeah,
well, actually twice.
Stop drinking water. That's clearly the...
But I like water.
I know. That's clearly the lesson tonight is to stop drinking water. It's not like the Dodgers, for the record, in the bottom of the first, they loaded the bases. So it's not like they didn't get their opportunities. It's not like they went out 1-2-3 in the first. So they needed that key hit they didn't get in the first inning. It'll be interesting to see if they can bounce back. They're down 5-0 in the second inning to the Houston Astros. Quickly on tomorrow night's Jets Stars game again, as we have 2 minutes before we throw it to Mitch Peacock in Bakersfield. Jets and the Stars tomorrow night, the first meeting between these two teams, the Jets' third game of the season against the Central Division rival. As what are you looking for from tomorrow night's game?
Well, yeah, and they got the Dallas Stars coming up twice out of the next three games.
Yeah.
And, you know, they've put together a nice little run here, guys, since they lost 5-2 to the Columbus Blue Jackets. And, you know, we've seen when the Jets use their speed and they attack with pressure, they've had good results. But I'm looking for some more contributions from the Brian Little, Patrick Laine, Nikolai Ehlers line. More so Brian Little and Patrick Laine. Obviously, Nikolai Ehlers scored the game-winning goal last night. But when you're talking about Brian Little and Patrick Laine, they've struggled a little bit offensively here. Possession numbers were really bad last night. And so I'm expecting more out of that line. We know what we're going to get out of the Scheifele, Connor, Wheeler line. And you expect Connor Hellebuck to probably give you the same type of goaltending as you've got from him all season long. But this Dallas Stars team, it's a different team than we saw last year, so don't necessarily expect the Jets to blow them out 8-2.
Shawnee?
You're going up against the league's top power play. Please stay disciplined. You know, important.
Yeah.
Don't take the unnecessary penalties. If you got to take one, so be it. Like you guys touched on the Brian Little, Patrick Laine, look for them to maybe get going, I'll say. Brian Little's always been a streaky player. Maybe that'll just transfer over. Maybe Laine, same thing, will score one, start to feel good about himself. No Martin Hanzel, maybe take advantage of some lack of depth down the middle. And Dallas coming off, this is game 5 of a 5-game road trip. So maybe a little worn down from spending a lot of time on the road. Maybe jump out to a quick start for the Jets. We'll see what happens.
It'll be interesting, the Jets and the Stars tomorrow evening at Bell MTS Place, a game, of course, you can hear live on TSN 1290 and watch on TSN 3. That's it for this Wednesday edition of NHL This Week. A big thank you to our guests. We were joined by Mike Hyka of the Dallas Morning News, Stephen Wino of the Associated Press, and Luke Korak, St. Louis Blues correspondent for NHL.com. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on iTunes, on tsn1290.ca, on our website, illegalcurve.com, and subscribe, get it sent to your device each and every week. That's the easiest way to do it. You can follow us on Twitter, @illegalcurve, facebook.com/illegalcurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is illegalcurve.com. For producer Rory, for Sean Asor, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Until Saturday at 9 a.m., we wish you good night and good luck. Stay tuned for Manitoba Moose Hockey next on your home for sports in Winnipeg, TSN 1290.
As long as you stick together, the team will be all right.